presenter is Douglas Curvan from RTI International, and the title of his talk is Assessment of Non-Response Bias in the Non-Pharmaceutical Interventions for Influenza Telephone Survey.
Get this over with, no relationships to disclose. I'd first like to start by acknowledging and thanking my co-authors, Frank DiStefano, who is our influenza vaccination expert, Rodney Baxter, who ran the analyses that we have completed so far, and our project director, Scott Wetterhall, who's here. This project study was supported by a cooperative agreement with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and we also consulted and appreciate the consultation of the North Carolina State Division of Public Health. The NPI and the NPI for Pandemic Influenza Survey refers to non-pharmaceutical interventions. Examples would include use of personal protective devices such as face masks, social distancing measures such as school closings, and then isolation and even quarantine. And the primary topics of the survey we asked people about were knowledges, attitudes, and practices related to influenza, steps taken to avoid the spread of influenza, recent experiences with influenza-like illnesses. And then a unique feature was they asked people about the number of social interactions they had in the past 24 hours, either for an adult who's completed the survey or one of their children, to get a sense of their exposure and sort of an average day. For the study, we only selected four of nine North Carolina counties that we had been working with in our MPI study. Two are mostly suburban counties, two are mostly rural counties, and for each pair we had an intervention and control county. So the intervention county had specific programs that were implemented during the 2007-2008 flu season. And our data collection ran for that whole flu season, September 2007 through into May 2008. So we had data from before the onset of influenza activity, during the height of activity, and then after activity had diminished. And just a quick geography lesson, if you're interested. What you want to focus on with all the colors are the nine blue counties. Those are the MPI study counties. And the four where I've tried to bold and have a little star and a dot are the four counties included in the survey. Iredell and Alamance above are two non-intervention counties, two control counties. And then Gaston and Robeson, which are further south along the South Carolina border. Those are the two intervention counties. And Gaston is a mostly suburban county just west of Charlotte, and Robeson is a very rural county. And just a few more points on our survey design. We divide the sample into eight monthly samples, waves, across the field period. For those numbers that we could match to an address, we sent an advance letter about a week prior to the start of each wave. We offered all sample members $10 to participate. Calls were completed by RTI telephone interviewers who are located in North Carolina, and we made up to 15 call attempts to contact each household. The average interview length was 20 minutes. And here are our overall response rates. Overall, 35% response rate. Most counties were similar, although Alamance County on the top line, you can see, was a little bit higher at 39%. And so certainly, like other telephone surveys with these type of response rates, there's a significant potential for non-response bias here. And if those of you who are familiar with phone surveys may be well aware, our response rates are declining precipitously. The Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System survey, over the 10 years from 1997 to 2006, their average response rates across all 50 states dropped 12%. And one of the key points about telephone surveys is that we usually have limited information available for non-responding households. And just as one example, there are one way to do that and to find the information was demonstrated in this Johnson et al. Article that I just recently read, and I would certainly recommend. But there they looked at community-level variables that were correlated with both survey non-response and some of their key survey measures. And we haven't completed our analyses, but our preliminary analysis was a bit simpler than this. We took a similar type of approach, and that we wanted to find variables that, and we just looked at demographics, that were correlated both with survey participation and some of our key measures. And our first key measure, our sort of test case, was influenza vaccination in the past 12 months. So our next step there was to identify demographic correlates with influenza vaccination, and our guide for that were BRFA survey data, but we also looked at National Health Interview Survey data. And the three demographics we looked at in this analysis were age, gender, and race and ethnicity. Those over age 65 are significantly more likely to have received a flu shot than younger adults. Females are more likely than males, and white non-Hispanic residents are more likely than those of other races or those who are Hispanic. And then the third step there was to actually see how these demographic factors correlated with survey response using census data for each of those counties. So in this way, we were able to see in what ways we represented people in each of these three demographic categories. We would expect that older respondents would be more likely to participate in a phone survey. Females generally participate more than males. And then white non-Hispanic respondents we expected might participate more. We did interviews in English only, I think I forgot to mention as well, so without having the Spanish option. And so we looked at each of those at the county level. And here's our sort of reality check just from our own survey data to see how age might be related to influenza vaccination. In all four counties, it was statistically significant. Those 65 and over were about 50% more likely than younger adults to have had a flu shot in the past 12 months. For gender, we were a bit surprised here. Despite the BRFIS and the National Health Interview Survey that shows a consistent pattern of women being more likely to have received a flu shot, we did see some differences, but none of them were statistically significant. So gender was not a factor here. In terms of race and ethnicity, I should point out too, we simplify analysis just to compare white non-Hispanic with other residents. And certainly when you look at the BRFIS data, you'll see that there are more differences across different racial groups as well. So this is just sort of a first pass. And just comparing the white non-Hispanic to other residents, we did see in two of the four counties, Gaston and Robeson, that they were more likely to have had a flu shot. The other two counties actually did show a difference as well, about 4%, but that wasn't statistically significant. So we have some potential there for both non-response bias, both based on age and the relationship between age and influenza vaccination, and then at least in two counties for race and ethnicity. And I'm not going to show you all four counties because they look very similar, but here's where we compared our representation for each of these demographic categories with the census data. So the first bar, the yellow bar, is the census data. And you can see for age 65 plus, we were represented that group over twice as much as we would have expected. We had more females than we would expect significantly, and somewhat more white non-Hispanic residents as well. Same thing for Robeson County and the other two counties, about twice as many of those 65 and over than we would expect, more females than we would expect, and somewhat more white non-Hispanic residents, although as you can see the demographic makeup of that county is quite different than the previous one. So the implications from non-response bias is that we had an underrepresentation of younger adults, overrepresentation of older adults, and so this likely contributed to higher estimates of people who received an influenza vaccination. We were about double the rate based on what the North Carolina BRFIS data would show. And I want to point out, too, that our results were, I'm talking about non-response bias, but our results were also affected likely by non-coverage of younger adults, specifically those folks who don't have landline phones anymore, only use cell phones. We only interviewed by landline, and so we didn't do cell phone sampling interviewing, which is a key point, I think, for covering younger adults. We didn't see any association between gender and influenza vaccination, so there's not an opportunity there for us to observe any bias. And underrepresentation of non-white and Hispanic residents likely contribute to higher estimates of influenza vaccination as well. And those results, we can't rule out coverage issues for those groups either. One of the things about this study, too, is that a lot of our indicators were specially designed for this survey. So we couldn't find other existing data sources where we could observe established correlations. So I'm going to speculate wildly for just a minute here. Underrepresentation of younger adults could have resulted in greater reports of taking more steps to avoid the flu, could have also resulted in respondents who expressed greater knowledge of how to prepare for flu season, and then it could have also contributed to lower reports of 24-hour social interactions, younger adults being more likely to be going to work each day, in school, taking their young children to school, or daycare, and those sorts of things, and so we probably got a little bit of an underrepresentation on the recent social interactions. Implications for data analysis. Well, certainly one place to start would be our weighting adjustments. Over and underrepresentation of certain residents certainly could have affected our prevalence estimates for things like influenza vaccination. And our adjustments could improve our estimates to a degree, although certainly with younger adults, that is a challenge, and there's only that those adjustments would be limited. We also overrepresented some residents who could be useful for other types of analyses. We would have expected no more than about 30% of residents to have had a flu shot. We've got closer to 50-50, and so at least in terms of unweighted comparisons and further analysis within this group, we observed more residents who had been vaccinated and may have taken other steps to avoid getting flu. As I said, one limitation of our study is that most of our survey items were specific to this survey, and so we weren't able to match them to BRFIS or National Health Interview Survey or other data to see what the correlations look like, and so we weren't really able to use, unable to use extrapolation techniques, just the speculations I mentioned a minute ago. We'd like to refine our analysis by finding additional parallel measures from other surveys that are included in our survey, and so we're looking at other surveys, especially ones that would cover North Carolina. We want to also move our analysis down to the zip code level census data. We have four local areas here, and so there could be variation within counties that could be considerable. And then, which would be following the approach in the Johnson paper I mentioned, running multivariate analysis, hierarchical analysis, with both census and survey data included. This will give us a much better, more precise sense of the magnitude of non-response bias on some of our key estimates. And if you have any questions, there's my contact information. RTI also has a website on, affiliated with our website. If you go to that website, all of our papers, they're probably not there yet, but all of our papers and presentations from this conference will be posted there. Thank you.
We do have a few minutes. Any questions for Doug?
Yeah, Doug, I'm just curious. I noticed that you had like quite a bit of recontacts you allowed, and just curious if you looked at the last 15 or 20% of your respondents, did you find their characteristics very different? And there might be some opportunities on making those tail-end respondents more of a corrector for non-response. There are ways to parse out the non-response adjustments before you actually do the reweighting for post-stratification. So I'm just curious.
Sure, we haven't looked at that, and certainly it could be possible. What you're talking about is sort of that those who are more difficult to reach might look more similar, might include some of those other folks who didn't participate at all, which is a key assumption, and we haven't looked at it, so I really don't know how comfortable we feel with that assumption about whether those who we reached further on could stand for non-respondents, but that's certainly a good point.
Interesting.
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
For future plans, is there going to be analyzing the data by zip code? Mm-hmm. Are you also planning to look at it by census tract? I've heard that's a classic way of looking at
possibly, but we probably in each county might not have a lot of respondents there. So, we have to look at that data. We haven't done those steps to see, but we want to get to a smaller level. So.
Thank you.